This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's time to look forward. The Iowa caucuses are just 8 days away, and back at some of the notables who stepped off the hustings in 2007. It's Wednesday, and time again for the political junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, NPR's political editor and our political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us. This week, what do the words impeachment, beautification, and Watergate have in common, the politicians and political figures who died in 2007? We'll check in with an up-and-coming political reporter in Iowa, and we want to hear from those of you who've spent your own money and time to campaign in the snows of Iowa and New Hampshire, whether you went clean for Gene or rode to the sound of the guns with Pat Buchanan, or if you're out there this year. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also tell us your story about why you decided to volunteer for a campaign in Iowa or New Hampshire on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, well, we have an email challenge for you. What's the strangest, most unwieldy, hardest to explain item you've ever tried to get aboard a commercial airliner? Again, the email address is talk@npr.org. First, though, the political junkie, Ken Rudin, joins us from his home just outside of Washington, D.C. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And I want to ask you, first of all, about the campaign. At this point, a lot of the candidates left Iowa for the holidays, I guess, except for Chris Dodd.
Well, Chris Dodd moved his wife and his two young children into Iowa several months ago because basically his whole campaign has been Iowa, as has many candidates. But the Christmas holidays, or at least Christmas Day, is over. And that means most candidates are back in Iowa, but not all of them.
And not an extraordinary amount of political news this week. Some fresh polls, but they just seem to show what every other poll seemed to show.
Well, they do. But again, 8 days is still 8 days before Iowa 2004. I was still saying Howard Dean was going to win, and he finished third. And I guess, you know, it doesn't matter what Ken Rudin has to say, but I think a lot of things can change in the last couple of days. And it looks like that large Mike Huckabee lead on the Republican side over Mitt Romney may be narrowing somewhat. Huckabee still seems to have a lead, but there's some indications that Romney's negative campaign against Huckabee is bearing some fruit. So again, plenty of time to go.
And a lot of focus also on the state of New Hampshire, which comes up just 5 days after Iowa.
Right. And that's John McCain's bid to become the 2008 comeback kid. He's doing really well in New Hampshire. He's narrowing the gap between himself and frontrunner Mitt Romney. And if McCain, who's campaigning in Iowa today, if he does some kind of a decent showing in the Hawkeye State on January 3rd, that could really benefit him 5 days later when New Hampshire votes.
Right. Later in the program, we're going to be talking with callers and emailers about why they went to volunteer in the snows of New Hampshire or Iowa for what candidate at what time. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. But first, we're going to be talking also about some of the politics. Politicians and political figures who left the scene this past year. And Ken, I guess we'll begin with your trivia question.
Well, I'd love to talk. There's so many influential people who left the scene in 2007. One of them, of course, is Norman Mailer. You don't think of him as being a political person, although, of course, he's a great, you know, writer and everything. But he did run for mayor of New York City in 1969. So the trivia question, this may not be the toughest trivia question, but who was his running mate for city council president that year? And what was their slogan? What were they pledging to do in that campaign?
Norman Mailer's running mate and also the slogan as they ran for mayor back in 1969 in New York City. But let's talk about some of the people who did pass away earlier this year. And we have to begin with the man who's, he will be best remembered for impeachment, and that's the clip of tape we're going to play. But Henry Hyde did a lot of things, but among them was to bring charges against the president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton.
So what if the president has undermined the integrity of his office, has brought disrepute on the presidency, has betrayed his trust as president, and has acted in a manner subversive of the rule of law and justice to the manifest injury of the people of the United States? That's an awful lot to dismiss with a brush off, to ignore with a mere so what.
Henry Hyde, then the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, appealing to the United States Senate didn't make it through, but appealing to the United States Senate to uphold impeachment charges against President Clinton.
Right, and of course, interesting, Henry Hyde was first elected to Congress in 1974 during the Nixon impeachment year. But Henry Hyde, for all the, you know, the things that the problems that liberals had with him, certainly on abortion, he was not so much the author, I learned that only recently, that he did not write the Hyde Amendment, but the Hyde Amendment that bared his name barred federal funds going to women who wanted to have abortions. But Henry Hyde was liked on both sides of the aisle, and the journalists really liked him, too. He was cordial. He was a fierce partisan, and he was a strong conservative, but he was really a good guy. And, you know, he retired from Congress last year after, like, some 35 years in Congress, and he was pretty much a giant in the Republican Party. But I think he went into that Clinton impeachment argument almost half-heartedly. I have a feeling that he was not the vociferous Clinton bagger that meant so many Republicans, you know, a lot of Republicans wanted him out of office. Hyde seemed to go a little soft on that.
And now let's talk about a former member of the Central Intelligence Agency known for one failed burglary. This, of course, Howard Hunt.
I deeply regret that I had any part in this affair. At the same time, I cannot escape feeling that the country I have served for my entire life and which directed me to carry out the Watergate entry is punishing me for doing the very things it trained and directed me to do.
Always the victim, Howard Hunt.
Well, Howard Hunt had a history of doing dirty tricks for the CIA. He had been an employee of the CIA until 1970, I guess, but he was also part of the Bay of Pigs fiasco. He was part of the coup. You know, he helped engineer the coup that got rid of the president of Guatemala in the 1950s. And he was the guy who, you know, basically recruited the four of the five Cubans who burglarized the Democratic National Committee at the Watergate office building in 1972. And he was defiant till the end, spent 33 months in prison.
We're talking about Howard Hunt and some of the other politicians and political figures who passed away in 2007. Later on in the program, we'll want to talk to you about why, if you went to volunteer in New Hampshire or Iowa, why did you do it? 800-989-8255. We also have a trivia question still out there. And let's see if we can get an answer from Craig. And Craig's calling us from Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure. Norman Mailer's running mate in 1969.
Yes, the running mate was Jimmy Breslin, and the motto was end fluoridation to free Huey Newton.
Nice try. You got halfway there.
Yeah, really? Huey Newton was one of Donald Duck's three nephews, if a lot of people forgot that. But that wasn't the exact slogan that they were running on.
All right, I'll listen to see who has it. I'm curious. I do remember that as part of the campaign.
Thanks very much. It wasn't their slogan, though. And let's talk more, though, about some of the other people who passed away. Molly Ivins remembered best as a commentator who really understood how to how to get a rise out of people.
I mean, the language was incredibly colorful and often quite filthy. The grammar was bad, and it was just hysterical. And newspapers had been in the habit of cleaning all this up for years, and I thought, why not put it in the way it is?
That laugh and the intention of putting it in just the way it is what Molly Ivins made her a fixture in Texas politics and then later on the national scene.
Oh, yeah, she drove conservatives nuts. I mean, she really had this way of just getting under the skin, and she always did it with a smile. But, you know, she was one of the great liberals who died this year. Leon Chull, who's the head of the ADA, also died this year. And conservatives lost a bunch of people, too. Jerry Falwell, the longtime leader, the founder, basically, of the Moral Majority of Liberty University, a strong conservative, also passed away. Harry Dent, Richard Nixon's, the guy who designed Nixon's Southern strategy, also died this year. A lot of ideologues on both sides of the aisle who passed away.
You mentioned Jerry Falwell, who, in a lot of ways, transformed the Republican Party, transformed fundraising in a lot of ways, but maybe best remembered for some intemperate remarks right after 9/11.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them, who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Jerry Falwell later apologized for those remarks, but Ken Rudin's certainly an important figure in Republican politics.
Well, that's a remark I was wincing, as a lot of people were when they were probably listening to that piece of tape. But again, in the late 1970s, when evangelical conservatives were really not part of the system, certainly not part of the emerging Republican majority, Falwell was one of the founders of it and helped elect Ronald Reagan in 1980 and kept Republicans in control for much of the next 25 years.
Another political figure, though, Lady Bird Johnson, who's best remembered, I guess, for beautifying America, but also one of the shrewdest business people ever in the White House, whether she was elected president or not.
Absolutely. I mean, she was, you know, she outlived her husband for a long time. I always remember those beautification campaigns with the billboards around the country. And actually, two other would-be first ladies also passed away this year. Eleanor McGovern, the wife of George McGovern, of course, he wasn't almost president. He lost 49 states in 1972, but she died this year. And so did Jane Wyman. And maybe had she stuck around a little longer, she could have been first lady, too.
She was Ronald Reagan's first wife and supplanted in that role by the time he was elected governor and then later president of the United States. Let's not forget also Tom Eagleton, one-time vice presidential candidate in the Democratic Party.
Right. He lasted 18 days as George McGovern's running mate in 1972 until he revealed that he had undergone shock therapy treatment for depression. The famous slogan of George McGovern saying, "I'm 1,000% behind Eagleton," that turned into a long lasting phrase in American politics. But you know, that brief time as VP nominee really obscured a very solid record as a three-term senator from Missouri.
We're talking with political junkie Ken Rudin, as we do every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. Our trivia question is out there, or at least part of it. We found out that Jimmy Breslin was the running mate of Norman Mailer in the campaign for mayor of New York City in 1969. What was their slogan? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email us talk at npr.org. And in just a moment, we'll also be talking with callers about why they decided to volunteer to spend their own time and their own money to campaign for a candidate in Iowa or New Hampshire, whether it was Clean for Gene or Riding to the Guns, The Sound of the Guns with Pat Buchanan. Again, 800-989-8255, email us talk at npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's the day after Christmas, and if you live in Iowa, sleigh bells have likely been replaced by doorbells. We've got NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin with us. There are just 8 days left until the caucuses and the campaigns are in high gear. Have you ever gone door-to-door for a candidate in Iowa or New Hampshire? Give us a call. Why? 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is going to be Matt. Matt's calling us from New Haven in Connecticut.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Where did you go to campaign?
Well, I ended up going to New Hampshire. I was just out of college, and I was in the midst of a switch of party affiliation. I had been an active member of the College Republicans while in college, and soon after that, I saw when I was young and irresponsible. I was young and irresponsible, and I switched and became a Democrat. And it was a very rude awakening for me personally, because when I was in college, we were, you know, the College Republicans would go on these trips, and the Republican Party would pay for buses, and they'd put us up in hotels and buy us beer, and it was a jolly good time had by all. And my first experience as a Democrat, I volunteered for Howard Dean up in New Hampshire. It was still quite early on in the primary process, but I found myself paying my own way, sharing a bus, and sleeping on the floor of the Manchester YMCA. So,
welcome to politics, Matt.
Exactly. Yeah.
and why did you feel so compelled to do it?
Well, you know, it was a lot of excitement. It was, as I said, it was a bit early on still in the process. I liked Howard Dean as a neighboring governor. I'm from Connecticut, so I liked him when he was still at about, you know, less than 2% in the polls, and just to see him all of a sudden raising money and doing well in the polls, and to see that he actually had a chance, I wanted to be a part of that, and I took a trip to New Hampshire, and it actually ended up making some news on that trip, because the young lady I was going door to door with was bit by a dog as we were knocking on doors, and Howard Dean, being a doctor, tended to her and
made candidate saves a campaign worker, right?
That's right.
Exactly. And then it all, of course, fell apart very quickly.
Yeah. It all went down to the scream. So.
The scream we remember every week in our montage.
I heard it and I smiled as you led in today.
Well, thanks very much, Matt. Appreciate the phone call. By the way, this time around, are you as active as you were 4 years ago?
Work keeps me from being as active. I've sent my money and I talk up my home state Senator Chris Dodd as much as I can, but I'm not able to go out of state at this point.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And Ken Rudin, that seems to define a lot of young volunteers, people who have just graduated from college, who can take time off and go door-to-door someplace, like New Hampshire.
Right. New Hampshire is even a better state than Iowa because history shows that it's just tougher to get people out to commit in Iowa to the caucuses. If you look at the number of people who participate in Iowa in the caucuses, far less than people than show up in the primaries. But two things about Howard Dean I want to mention. One, I'm among the people who don't really feel that the scream is really what did Howard Dean in. Of course, his scream came at the end of losing the Iowa caucuses. But it was interesting, the day of the Iowa caucuses, before the results were in, Howard Dean had a comfortable lead in New Hampshire. And once John Kerry won in Iowa, that lead, that Howard Dean lead in New Hampshire, slipped away. And I suspect that, again, whatever happens on January 3rd in Iowa is going to have tremendous reverberations in New Hampshire 5 days later.
Well, let's talk about Tim. Tim's with us from Spokane in Washington.
Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, nice to meet here, you guys. Just going down the highway and heard you make this welcoming for people making calls in. I was in New Hampshire. I was helping the Bradley campaign going against the former Vice President Gore.
And so that was 8 years ago.
Yeah, that was 8 years ago.
And what was that like?
It was great. There was a couple, I can't, quite honestly, I feel badly, I don't remember their names, but they let me, the Bradley people arranged for me to stay at their home. He was some kind of a producer of television shows or something, I think, in New Hampshire. And he and his wife let me stay upstairs in their home for a week, almost 10 days. And I just went around helping the Bradley people go door to door and got to do a lot of things with a lot of the Bradley people. It was a really neat experience.
And most of this, I assume, was on your own dime.
Oh, yes, all of it was. I came out from Northern California, flew out there and just decided I had a little extra money, and I'd do what I could with my money and help Bradley. And then, of course, Mr. Howard Dean got involved, and we all know where it went from there. So.
Well, it
kind of hurt.
Was it worth it in retrospect?
Absolutely. I thought it was a great experience. And if I could, I'd like to get out and help Barack Obama this year in Iowa. I was hoping to try and get down there for a week, but it's all coming up real quick, and I don't know if I'll be able to afford the time.
Yeah, and I would wonder, the ideological differences among the Democratic candidates, well, they're there, but they're not huge. Why would you pick one over Barack Obama over Chris Dodd or Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton?
Well, quite honestly, I really wanted to support Hillary. I think a lot of her, I think she'd be a great president. I guess the one thing that bothers me is just the family connection with Bill. It's the idea that it bothers me that the wife of a president would be ascending to the throne, so to speak. Almost becomes something from the days of jolly old England and kings and queens.
Not a fan of dynasty, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
And I like the idea that we've got a chance here to elect a bright fellow who I think could do a great job leading our nation.
Okay, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for taking it.
Well, let's get some more calls on this in a minute. But earlier this year, Sydney Rickoff entered a contest in Scholastic magazine to report on the presidential election. She is 9 years old. She's already interviewed many of the candidates and their spouses. Sydney Rickoff joins us now from her home in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Sydney, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today. Welcome.
Thank you.
And let us know, which of the big candidates have you managed to get an interview with thus far?
Fred Thompson, Rudy Giuliani, John Edwards, Mitt Romney, Barack Obama, and that's it.
And that's it? So that's still pretty good. I can hear Ken Rudin gnashing his teeth as the National Public Radio sometimes can't get interviews with some of these people.
And I've also interviewed Elizabeth Edwards, Kevin Bacon, John Edwards, Zach Johnson and Bill Clinton.
Ah, and what did Kevin Bacon have to say?
Well, I asked him why he was supporting John Edwards, and he said because he thinks he would make a great president and
lead the country pretty well.
Lead the country to a better life.
Right. And who was the most interesting person you've managed to speak with thus far?
Probably Zach Johnson.
Zach Johnson, and why?
Because he had a lot to say and about the Masters and stuff.
About the Masters. So that's what you wanted to talk to about golf.
Oh, what?
About golf, you mean.
Sorry, what?
What was he talking about, the Masters?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So to some degree, some of the sidekicks are more interesting than the candidates themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. The other question I wanted to ask you was, why did you get interested in politics at such a young age?
Because I wanted to learn more about stuff, reporting, and about all the candidates in case they... Because one of them will be president.
Because one of them will be president. And let me ask you this. Have you started collecting campaign buttons yet?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have.
Is she married?
That's Ken Gruden asking that. Sidney Rykoff, do you think you're going to follow this as a career later in life?
Yes.
All right. A little competition for you, Ken, if we decide to go younger for our demographic. Sidney, good luck to you and in your reporting for Scholastic Magazine.
Thank you.
Sidney Rykoff, one of the youngest, if not the youngest, political reporters on the campaign trail today, age 9, with us by phone from her home in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Nice to know that there's people coming up behind you, Ken.
Neil, you didn't ask her about that Goldwater Rockefeller primary battle in '64 and how she felt about that.
No, I didn't. We'll let you ask that question. Anyway, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This, again, going back to the question of have you gone to Iowa or New Hampshire to campaign? For whom and why? Let's see if we can go now to Stefan. Stefan with us from New Haven. Excuse me. This says New Hampshire. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm actually not quite sure where New Hampshire I am, since I'm not from the area. I came up about a week ago. I'm actually in Manchester, apparently, as I've been informed. Decided to campaign for Ron Paul once I heard that there was a good movement there. And an engineer from Google actually left his job in California and went all the way to New Hampshire and started a grassroots movement. So I decided to join in.
And you're from New Haven, is that right?
No, I'm actually from Washington, D.C., and I took a couple of weeks off during the Christmas holidays to come up here and campaign.
So the holidays worked out for you in that respect, because you could. It turns out to be a crucial part of the campaign.
Exactly. With the primaries moved up so soon, it actually worked out very well.
And why Ron Paul?
Really, I think feel like he's the only candidate who represents my views and a lot of the views of many of my colleagues and friends, and also that not many people know about him since he's not covered that well in the TV and the print media, so we have to go door-to-door and spread his message, and we've been very fortunate so far in New Hampshire, where people are very open-minded and like to listen to you.
And will you be heartbroken if he loses?
Of course it will be heartbroken if I lose. If he loses, I assume any supporter of any candidate should be, but we've got our high hopes up, and especially after talking with people here and hearing the responses, being very positive that, you know, every day we get more and more confident that we're doing something pretty great here.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thanks for the call. And let's see if we can go now to, this is Linda. Linda with us from Iowa City.
Hi.
Hi. And you don't have to go very far to campaign for somebody.
No, I don't have to go very far. And I, turns out, have a lot in common with your young reporter, because I, too, started out campaigning for people when I was even younger than 9. I trundled up and down the street with my little wagon with... campaign things for Eisenhower.
Well, please tell me it was a radio flyer.
It was. My little red wagon. And I then, like Hillary, I turned against both the Republican Party and the Vietnam War when I was in college, and became a Democrat because of issues like poverty and children's issues. And then campaigned for George McGovern.
George McGovern there in Iowa in 1972.
Yep. And my husband and I both campaigned for him, while Bill and Hillary were campaigning for him in Texas.
Ken Rudin, that's the campaign you say where the Iowa caucuses really took off.
Well, actually, they didn't take off, but George McGovern was the first one who recognized that there was such a thing as the Iowa caucuses, that it was an early event, and under the radar, George McGovern went into Iowa and didn't win. I mean, he finished actually uncommitted one, and then Ed Muskie, the Democratic frontrunner, but McGovern did much better than anybody expected, and Jimmy Carter was well aware of McGovern's strategy, and 4 years later, in 76, he's the one who made Iowa the staple it is now in presidential politics.
And we won our precinct by one vote. The one I was campaigning in on Election Day, I got two people to the polls 15 minutes before it closed, and we won the precinct by one vote.
Congratulations. That's nice work.
And right now I'm campaigning for Hillary.
Well, good luck to you, too.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for the call. We're talking with our political junkie, Ken Rudin. You can read his political junkie column at our website. That's at npr.org. And join us every Wednesday as Ken joins us up until Election Day and probably thereafter. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller in. And this is John. John with us from Shreveport in Illinois, calling with an answer on the trivia question.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon. We already know that Jimmy Breslin was Norman Mailer's running mate for mayor in New York City in 1969. What was their slogan?
Vote the rascals in.
Ha! That may have been one of their slogans, but not the slogan, I don't
think. Well, that was their campaign slogan. But their platform was to make New York City the 51st state. But actually, their slogan was "Vote the Rascals In," and he did finish, I think, fifth out of six Democrats running for mayor that year.
Larry in Amissville, if I get that right, or Amissville, Virginia, says Norman Mailer, Jimmy Breslin campaigned to make New York City the 51st state. So, thanks very much, John. Congratulations.
I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
What was William F. Buckley's reaction when they asked him, what would you do if you won mayor?
When he ran for mayor of 1965, he said he would demand a recount.
Yes.
Which has always endeared him to me. Thanks very much for the call, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go back to the question and go to, this is Wendy. Wendy with us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I campaigned for Dennis Kucinich 4 years ago in Buffalo, and we held a debate with the party representatives, and I made some calls to Iowa back then, and I'm making calls to Iowa now, and I support Dennis wholeheartedly, and I will be disappointed if he's not our president, because he is the only one who has the courage enough to tell everybody nationally, publicly, that he is planning to reform government.
And you would do this again, presumably, for either Mr. Kucinich or another candidate 4 years from now?
I would.
Uh-huh.
If I wholeheartedly believed in them. And Dennis has integrity that is impeccable, and it's in his record. If you go to his website, there's a video on there when he was 31 years old and he was interviewed by Tom Snyder in a diner. It's really, really amazing, because he talks the same way he does now. He has not changed, and he has such staunch values, and his platform has not changed.
Well,
he's still the same man.
Well, good luck to you and your candidate as well.
Pardon me?
And I said good luck to you and to your candidate as well.
Thank you so much, and thanks for putting me on.
Sure, thanks for the call.
Okay.
And before we leave this subject, Ken, these volunteers, wherever they're from, they make a big difference.
Oh, they do. The New Hampshire, Iowa, the winners can't do it without them. I mean, even if you think of the people who actually officially lost, like Eugene McCarthy in 1968 to Lyndon Johnson or George McGovern in 72, even though they finished second, they're volunteers, you know, these college kids, they came out of nowhere, they just left their homes, and they slipped out of slept in sleeping bags to make a difference. And even though their candidates may not have won, they certainly made a difference and perhaps in some cases drove the front runners out of the race.
Have you ever talked to anybody who didn't get their start somewhere, stuffing envelopes or going door to door?
Yes, Sydney, that 9-year-old, by the way, who replaces me after next November.
She'll be the new political junkie. She'll be the new political junkie. Ken Rudin, thanks very much.
See you, Neil.
Ken Rudin will be back with us next week for one day before the Iowa caucuses edition of the Political Junkie. He will also be with us the day after, on Friday, January 4th, for a special broadcast at 2 o'clock that afternoon, evaluating the results of the caucuses in Iowa and looking ahead to their effect on the primaries coming up in New Hampshire. So join us next Wednesday and then again next Friday. Coming up, if you're a double bass player, odds are you wished you'd taken up the piccolo when it was time to get your instrument on or off a commercial flight. What's the oddest or most unwieldy thing you've ever tried to wrestle onto an airplane? Let us know. Talk@npr.org, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Cownan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.